Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Take the Black Live. I am Kayla Kinnearum. Joining me is WinterIsComing.net Editor-in-Chief Dan Selke. We apologize for the slight delay. Technology is always fun, isn't it?
It can be a challenge. But we're here now. Thanks for joining us, guys. We're here to talk Game of Thrones news, talking about some fire news, as always.
But I got to learn a little bit about you in the delay.
What did you learn, Kayla Kinnearum?
I learned that you can't whistle.
No.
You swam in high school.
I swam in high school.
Neither of us can cook.
No.
And your earlobes are attached.
We had a lot of time to talk while we got things together on the technical side of things. Anyway, hi everybody for joining us. Hey Julie, hey Lisa, hey Kathy, hey Diane, hey Kathleen. Glad to see you all. Hey from Orlando, says Kathleen.
I want to be in Orlando. It's warm there.
And Lisa is loving the look. I'm assuming she's talking to you with your cool jeans.
I forgot I was going to be on air today and I wore ripped jeans.
Anyway, let's start. Let's just jump right into it, Kayla. We got some fun news to cover.
We do. You've got some exciting stuff for us this week. As always.
As always, with what's happening on the set of Game of Thrones Season 8. We're going to start with this set they've been building for a long, long time. And Julie asked, do my clocks go forward this weekend? I actually don't know. I'll Google that later and see if I'll catch it. Don't worry. Because she's in Australia. I don't know what they do down there.
Is it daylight savings this weekend? I'm not ready for that.
Is it daylight savings this weekend, everybody?
We lose an hour.
It is. I'm being told it is from our
crack
staff. Anyway, the Game of Thrones crew has been building an enormous, gargantuan set on the back lot of Titanic Studios in Belfast, Northern Ireland for 5 months now.
It's a long time.
Let's put it in perspective. 5 months to work on one set isn't just a long time. It's pretty much unheard of for a TV show. Can you imagine
it is staying
Cheers
put.
Building a five-month set?
No.
It's ridiculous. It's insane. And it's gotten to the point where it's so detailed. They spent so much money on it. They've poured about $1.38 million into this set, this King's Landing set that has towers and buildings and a street and a huge kind of glistening white tower in the middle.
Does it have a drawbridge?
It doesn't have a drawbridge, because King's Landing, you know, it's not really around rivers. I mean, it is, but it's not such that there's a drawbridge to it. Just a gate.
Yes.
We have a new picture here to see how beautifully detailed it is. And it's gotten to the point where, and hello, Daniel. Hello, Nicole. Hello, everybody. Glad you can join us. Gotten to the point where they put in so much money and time that, according to the Belfast Telegraph, HBO is going to keep the set standing even after filming on Season 8 is over.
I love this.
Why do you love it, Kayla?
So fans can go see it.
That's one of the reasons. Yeah, that is really nice. So after Season 8 is over, fans will be able to go visit this huge, look at that there, this beautiful King's Landing set and see it for themselves, which is a really nice thing to do for them, kind of to honor the people who have followed the show all the time and let them just walk around King's Landing.
Dan, it is my dream that you go visit the set.
How about yourself?
Same. I'll go visit it. So these are the places I've been. Full House. Oh, Mrs. Really? Doubtfire House, Home Alone House, Carrie Bradshaw's Stoop from Sex and the City, and Monica's apartment on Friends.
You take this seriously. I didn't know that.
I am a huge fan of going to places that are in movies and TV shows.
Wait, the Friends thing, is it like an actual apartment front or
something?
It's
at the corner of Grove. No, wait. Grove and Bedford. Is that Friends or Sex and the City? That's Friends? I'm getting confirmation that is Friends. Grove and Bedford. So it's the outside shot of Monica's apartment. It's not the actual set that they used. Because that was in the Warner Brothers lot in LA. Which also, I want to go visit that set and get my picture taken on the Central Perk couch.
At some point.
That set is still up at WB.
I took the tour. Breaking Bad walking tour in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
That's really cool.
I thought it was pretty fun.
I love Breaking Bad. I want to do the Sound of Music tour through Austria.
That would be great. I'd love that. Getting a hot air balloon or something.
Anyway, so real life sets are cool and fun for fans to visit.
Absolutely. And there could be more to it than that. Like Kathleen suggests, how about it's for a future show or a prequel? And according to the Telegraph, they did say it's going to be for tourists, for fans to visit. And also because, you know, you build this giant castle set that's so elaborate and so detailed and well done that they plan to use it for, and I'm quoting, future movie projects. So it's a good way for HBO to get its money's worth. Although we have to wonder what future projects. We know that HBO is making five Game of Thrones prequels or developing them at the moment. Not all of them will get made, I'm sure, but they're developing five. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what if they make one that's literally set during a point in time in Westeros when King's Landing is still standing. It couldn't hurt to have a ready-made, beautifully detailed set of King's Landing still standing.
Exactly.
What movie doesn't want a castle? Some medieval thing, King Arthur. You can use a castle for a lot of things.
We haven't had a good period movie in a while.
We had some bad ones. We had that King Arthur one starring, who was it? Arnie Hammer or something like a year ago?
Yeah, I didn't see that.
That tanked. Charlie Hunnam. I get him confused. Sorry.
Oh.
Oh, Julie says that you're gorgeous, Kayla. That is so devoted. I'm just thinking about the friend stuff.
Well, thank you, Julie. Or obsessed. Either one.
Oh, and Anna is from Austria. Fun fact, Sound of Music, not very popular there. Why not, Anna? It's good.
It's huge in America.
It really is. All these years later, it really is.
That's disappointing.
But I'm sorry if tourists annoy you, Anna, if you're in Austria and they ask you about Sound of Music and if you spin in the hills.
I also met Julie Andrews.
No, you didn't. Seriously?
True story. My first job in LA, hostessing at the P.F. Chang's in Santa Monica, she came in with her family.
No way.
It was right before her husband died.
I would die. That's so cool.
It was like probably the coolest thing that's ever happened to me.
Yeah, that would be badass. Did you get an autograph or anything?
No.
No, that's too much.
Also, Adam Sandler came in a lot, and Helen Hunt, and Tom Hanks, and who am I missing? It's not important.
Whatever, Julie Andrews.
Julie Andrews was the biggest celeb I saw.
I thought I saw Sigourney Weaver once, but it was just a woman who kind of looked like her from the back.
Cool.
Anyway, that's exciting. One suggestion has been that because we know that after the Game of Thrones crew clears out of Titanic Studios, Disney is going to be using it to make Star Wars films, which does make some sense because we also know that David Benioff and Dan Weiss, the producers of Game of Thrones, are going to work on Star Wars films, so why wouldn't they want to go back to their old haunt?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they could use the castle set for that. But on the other hand, who needs a castle in a galaxy far, far away, outer space, space lasers and lightsabers and stuff?
That is interesting.
But the point is,
being set in space.
it's just one suggestion. But the point is, it's going to stay standing, which I really do like. I can easily see myself using it as an excuse to travel to Northern Ireland, take a sightseeing tour, and walk around King's Landing.
I want nothing more for you. Truly.
You keep saying that.
I want you an extra on the show. I want you to go visit the set.
I'll try for an extra on the prequels. I got one response on Twitter when I announced, they're going to get the King's Landing set up. And someone said, it's going to be so many Cersei fans walking around naked in that thing.
Ooh, yeah. Please keep your clothes on.
There'll probably be a sign after a while. Anyway, speaking of naked Cersei. We have some intrigue from the season 8 set involving an actress named Rebecca Van Cleave. Not a name you might recognize, but you know who she is.
You recognize her body.
You recognize her body. Because Rebecca Van Cleave is the actress who stood in for Cersei Lannister during her infamous walk of shame scene during the season 5 finale.
You can imagine that one, right? Doing that?
No, I cannot.
Just having to walk naked through a huge crowd of people and being filmed.
And also, they're throwing stuff at her and they're jeering at her. Right. It must have been very uncomfortable.
I will say that editing was amazing. You could not tell.
To this day, that's one of the sequences that kind of sticks with me. I think they did it really well. I mean, what really impressed me about it, we're kind of getting off topic a little bit, was that it's a naked woman, a beautiful naked woman, walking through the streets. And Game of Thrones had a problem sometimes with objectification.
Mm-hmm.
But they kept it very focused on the pain and very focused on the angst and the drama. So it wasn't...
Versus it being, a naked woman walking through the street.
It didn't feel...
No, I know what you mean. I get that.
...illicit at all.
Right.
Which, it's incredibly powerful and strange and distorted and demented, but I thought it did what they did. I thought the sequence was a big success. As you measure that kind of success. Anyway, Rebecca Van Cleave, the actress who played the body double, is... And Sam Bradburn, lol, I came in at the wrong time. Probably if you just came in and heard us talking about naked ladies walking through streets and not being illicit. Anyway, Rebecca Van Cleave, the actress who played Cersei's body double, is back on the season 8 set. There was a casting
More
agency.
Naked Cersei.
I mean, that's really the only conclusion we can come to, right? Why else would they have her? There was a company called Industry Casting that tweeted it out. The tweet has since been deleted, saying that she's back on the season 8 set for a repeat role. And she was in town for at least 3 days, maybe more. And this conclusion that we get from this is what, Kayla?
We're going to be seeing Cersei naked in season 8.
Cersei's going to be naked in season 8 for some reason. Why might she be naked, Kayla? What could happen?
What could possibly go wrong for Cersei in season 8?
Everything.
Do we think it... Did you say it has something to do with snow? Did I read that?
Yeah, that's another part of it. The other intriguing thing is that the actress, Ms. Van Cleave, posted an Instagram picture of herself. She's
wrapped,
you know,
in...
she hasn't been indoctrinated to the point where she knows not to do anything like this yet. In a tent on set, basically saying that, oh, what a long day of work, my hair is messy and tangled, but I'm working with the best actors in the world, which tells us, okay, so they're bringing back the Cersei body double, which means Cersei nude scene, and she's filming outdoors?
Yes.
In the snow?
Do you think she runs into the dead?
I don't know what that portends. I mean, it's possible
we
the actress
know
is just
Snow
like...
Jon Snow is at King's Landing, yes.
We do. At some point, he'll go to King's Landing at some point. But at that point, Cersei looked fine.
Right. She was fully clothed.
So it's an intriguing cocktail that I don't know quite what to do with. What do you guys watching think that means? A nude scene with Cersei, possibly outdoors in the snow. My take is, I think they're probably going to film an indoor sex scene, maybe with Euron Greyjoy, with whom she... Because she made certain promises last season.
Yeah.
Just kind of stringing him along to get his alliance, but he wants to, you know, get down. I'm hoping that the actress was just, like, going out for a smoke and for a craft services donut to the tent.
Craft services is great.
Have you ever been in a set where they have craft services?
Yeah. When I did my background work.
Is it in a tent?
Yes, it is.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, in that case, okay, we crack the case right now. Because I can't think of a scenario where she would be naked in the snow. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Unless they wanted to, like, recreate the Walk of Shame scene, in which case, why?
White Walkers? Maybe she's a naked run-in with them?
God, it should be interesting in season 8. And I'd love to hear what you guys think. What do you think that portends? Ooh, Julie says baby birthing or getting it on with Euron or the Night King.
Right, she's pregnant.
She is pregnant. We could see a horrifying birth scene in the snow.
Who doesn't love that?
Jeez, that would be a way to go out, wouldn't it? Keep raising that bar, Game of Thrones. Anyway, any other thoughts on this, Kayla?
Now I can't stop thinking about that. So, no.
Sweet dreams, everybody.
I still don't know if she's pregnant. I know she says she is.
It's true. We're sure.
Could not be.
People have There's claimed that she could be lying. You know, Cersei, not the most truthful person in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, before we sign off for the day, I want to congratulate Ashley Eartham for winning the 2 tickets to the Game of Thrones live concert experience last week. Congratulations, Ashley. Very, very cool. Hope you enjoy that. And I want to tease that next week we're giving away something that, in my opinion, might be even cooler. We've partnered with Fun.com to let you choose from an array of Game of Thrones prizes, like really cool, expensive Game of Thrones prizes,
right,
including a Stark shield made of actual steel. There it is up there. A Dothraki Arrink. The helmet the Hound has is in the shape of an actual hound's head.
Very cool.
Really cool. A Lannister shield and the knife that Arya used to kill Littlefinger.
Are those weapons sharp?
I don't know, but when we do the giveaway, only over the age of 18 is allowed to participate. But that's going to be next week. Next Wednesday, we're going to have that giveaway. So come on back, and you could stand a chance to win one of those.
Those are legit.
Kick butt items. I agree.
Is this like a U.S. thing again?
It is a U.S.
thing. If we're shipping?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry, Julie.
So, yes, sorry, Julie, as always.
And friends.
But thanks to Fun.com. And, right? Wow, they're really good. Congrats, Ashley, of course. Oh, wow. Yeah, it's pretty exciting. So I hope to see you guys back next Wednesday for that. But before we sign off, we're going to invite Josh Hill onto the show for another episode of A Song of Dan and Josh. Kayla, have a good time. Glad seeing you. Where we go through A Song of Ice and Fire chapter by chapter and give us our insights. Josh, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well.
Good.
How are you doing, Dan?
I'm doing well. I think you should say, we got a comment last week where I think someone said, Josh never says hello. So
hello.
Say hello to all the commenters out
Julie,
there.
Julie Davies. Hello.
Juan Barrera wants to know what time. Juan, we're going to be back here 4 p.m. Central Time next Wednesday for this giveaway. So I hope to see you and everybody you know you've ever met there. Yeah. Anyway, Josh, today we are going over two chapters from Game of Thrones. We got Tyrion 4 and Arya 3.
Yep.
Let's start in with Tyrion 4, or Tyrion's Adventures on the Road with Catelyn. What'd you think of this one?
It reminded me of the first time on the show when I thought of Tyrion as not really like evil Lannister-ish, more of like he's the good guy Lannister. And we kind of saw that in this chapter, in that he buddies up a little bit when they get attacked and everything. And basically he saves Catelyn at one point.
Yeah, he does.
So, and so this is kind of like the building of the trust of Tyrion to the reader, to me. This is like, all right, we kind of had that with the chapters with Jon when he's talking to him on the wall.
Yeah, I think we did.
And this is kind of reinforcing that to me, where it's not, he's not just doing that one time. This is a prolonged thing. We can trust Tyrion. Because the same thing happened with Jaime, too, over the course of the show, where now we've come around to Jaime and we really like him. We're like, okay, because in the first couple of seasons, it was like, you know, we don't like him. He's pushing Bran out of towers
out
and he's
windows,
banging his sister. And like, we don't really like that.
He also hobbles Ned in the next chapter.
Yeah. But then he's kind of swung back. And so, like, this chapter reminded me of when Jaime and Brienne are kind of going on their little road trip
really?
Together. So, yeah, because that was kind of when I started coming around to John or to Jaime, because that was that relationship that they had there. It was a different side of him. So, and this was kind of the same thing where it's like these two characters that maybe shouldn't be together are linked up. And they're helping each other out, and it kind of comes out to a happy conclusion.
Well, it's cool that you say that, because, I mean, like, I could see it. Like Jaime and Brienne, Catelyn and Tyrion are at odds here. Mm-hmm. I think more clearly than Jaime and Brienne are. I
she
mean,
just
Catelyn,
kidnapped them
in the last chapter. And she genuinely thinks that he has something to do with killing or trying to kill her son. Mm-hmm. And I feel like their relationship is more antagonistic. And it's interesting you say that Tyrion is coming off as good here. Because this is the chapter, by the way, everybody, where, you know, Catelyn's taking Tyrion to the Vale, to the Eyrie. And they are set upon by the Mountain Clans, who are just kind of brigands that just want to kill them and take their stuff. And there's a battle, and they win. And there is that moment toward the end where Tyrion, like you said, he doesn't like Catelyn, obviously, because she's kidnapped him. But he decides to help her anyway. There's even a line I wrote down here. Oh, here we go. Okay. Okay. Let them have the bitch, Tyrion thought, and welcome to her. Yet somehow he was moving, and then he kills a guy with her. At the same time, I know that'd be a long
That's great
time
bonding.
To
find it. That's excellent bonding.
Well, yeah,
that's how
also,
I made all of my friends.
Yeah, just murder the guy who's going to murder them. But also, I mean, I feel like he's darker in the books than he is in the show. Like, he has some sick stuff in this chapter. He thinks a lot about when he's going to kill people. Mm-hmm. I think this is the first time we hear a Lannister always paid his debts.
Huh.
Kirkland would learn that someday, as would his friends Laerys and Mohar, and the good Sir Willis, and the sellswords Bronn and Chicken.
Mm-hmm.
So he's thinking, I'm going to kill all these people when I get out of this. And then once the fight starts, that a jerk-ass singer who distracted him the first time. He crushes his fingers for fun after a horse falls on him, and he's just like, oh, guess it happens during a battle, because he is not a fan of that guy.
No.
So he does come through in the end, but we're definitely getting light and dark sides of Tyrion in this chapter, I think.
I could see them pulling that off in the show, though, like Tyrion doing something like crushing a guy's finger who had just kind of sold him out. But it would be more of a coy thing. It would come off lighter than it did in the book. He's kind of an a-hole in the book. Like, that comes across more here than it does in the show, which I kind of like, because he's coming out of it. I'm assuming he's going to come out of it more than he did on the show, so it's going to feel more of like a complete arc of this is where he was, where he is kind of still working that Lannister poison through his blood a little bit, where he is kind of sick and twisted, and then he's going to come out of it on the other end like better, I guess you could say, healed from his bloodline.
I could say that. Yeah, I could say that. I mean, because he still has the Heart of Gold thing going on, because he does save Catelyn, but he also has the valid instinct to not want to be kidnapped anymore, because again, he's innocent, and he knows he's innocent. Yeah. What do you think of the kind of the muddled aspect of the chapter? It's another instance where George R. R. Martin is letting his lead character, in this case Catelyn, mm-hmm. be really wrong about something. Mm-hmm. Like, she's kidnapped Tyrion. She thinks he had something to do with Bran's attempted murder. She is wrong. Mm-hmm. Like, she's not right, but the evidence was such that you can't really blame her that bad.
Yeah.
But she's in a situation where she's taking this innocent but kind of asshole-ish man mm-hmm. to face justice. How are we supposed to take, like, who are we supposed to sympathize with? Catelyn or Tyrion?
I interpreted that two different ways. The first one was, this is back-to-back chapters where Stark has been wrong about
the
something.
The Starks just are like, not known for their piercing powers of observation.
Yeah, they're just absolutely wrong. So that kind of is setting up this idea that, because in the first couple of chapters, the first part of the book, it's very much they know what they're doing. They're the heroes of the story. And now it's like it's flipped and they're just completely wrong. They're out of their element. They're way out over their skis. And I sympathize with both Catelyn and Tyrion.
I think that's the way, that's the best conclusion,
yeah,
I think.
Because Catelyn is coming from a very authentic place. She wants to find, this is her son she's talking about. She wants justice. And Tyrion is also coming from that same, and he's not doing it in an aggressive way.
I didn't freaking do it.
Yeah, he's not being combative about it in a way where he's like, you're wrong and I'll kill you. It's like he's really trying to like articulate his innocence, which is different from, I think, maybe different characters in this book that they would do. They would just be like, all right, I'm done with that. We're just going to, I'm going to kill you or get you killed.
Sure.
And not going to have to worry about it. Whereas Tyrion's actually trying to problem solve. Which is where I sympathized with him and thought like this was like good guy Tyrion from the show, because he is trying to not be a problem. He doesn't want this to be a conflict. He wants this just to be solved and move on. That's not a Lannister thing to do.
He wants it to be solved, but I mean, again, that long list of people he was going to kill afterwards.
That's the dark side of Tyrion too, yeah.
I mean, he wants to pay the debts. He's been done wrong. He wants to get even.
Yeah.
I mean, he's trying to make the best of it on the way. Mm-hmm. I we disagree that he wants to solve it and move on. I think he wants to solve it and then get revenge.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Add Catelyn. You think he'd add Catelyn to the list if they had done this?
Maybe. He didn't mention her in this long list of things, but I think he probably would.
And him saving her at the end kind of did it for me too, because it's like that was a moment where like he crushes the guy's fingers and he's like, "This is I can do it." Like that would be him solving and getting revenge in one fell swoop. But he saved her, so that was the good guy Tyrion shining.
That's a good
point.
Also, the other fun thing about the muddling of the waters is that at the end of the chapter, we see that Catelyn isn't quite as in the right as she was before. Tyrion isn't quite as in the wrong, because she captured Tyrion by getting all these guys to help her, right?
Yeah.
And they're doing it for the promise of money. They're doing it because it's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of hard to separate the one from the two. But by the end of it, they all fight in a battle together. And then Tyrion's laughing with all of them at the end of it. So he kind of, he gets a couple of them to like him at least. And then the situation where Catelyn wants to bury the bodies, and they're like, we don't have time for that. We got to get moving. Mm-hmm. And so, and she has to face up to, oh, my authority's not really complete. I can't afford to do that. Or they'll leave me, or they'll switch to him. And then Tyrion has an axe and a dagger, and he's not tied anymore. So they kind of go into this fight being, Catelyn's clearly in the right, Tyrion's clearly in the wrong, and they come out of it, everyone's a little more on an even playing field, even though they're all, Tyrion's still technically a prisoner.
Yeah.
He has a greater degree of power, which I thought was a fun and natural progression.
I liked that.
And finally, we meet Bronn in this chapter.
We do.
First
Hello,
Bronn appearance. What do you think of that?
I liked it. It was
low-key.
I felt like his description, and we've talked about this with other characters, his description in the book made him sound more like a heroin addict than he
really
is
did.
On the show. It's like he's got a gaunt face.
Let's read it. I wrote it down. Our first look at Bronn ever in the book. He was near a shadow himself, bone thin and bone hard, with black eyes and black hair and a stubble of beard. Like, kind of, from the book. But yeah, all that near a shadow, bone thin, bone hard, it does make him sound like a heroin addict.
Yeah. But, you know, it's close enough.
Close enough. They got it. You can't find a rail thin person. Ooh, Nicole Marie has a good comment. The road to hell is paved with good intentions. The Starks are trying to do right, but it keeps going wrong. I'd agree with that.
That's good,
Sounds about right.
I could agree. I get that.
Finally, one other little bit before we move on from this chapter. Shadow cats are something they mention a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're just mountain lions, but it's like a silly fantasy name for a mountain lion.
He's trying
to
build his own world. I can't kill him for that. That's
No, it's fine. I mean, what's cool about the first book from the fantasy perspective is that, as you've noticed, except for the very first chapter when there's White Walkers, there's been zero fantasy stuff.
Yeah.
It's all, you know, incest and conspiracies and... I mean, I guess just the wall is kind of fantastic.
Yeah,
but what's happening to the wall is just like normal Full Metal Jacket stuff.
Yeah. But that's also why people love the show so much. Why it was such a mainstream success is it's like, because I remember watching the first season and lots of people were saying that. They're like, oh, this is a fantasy. Because it was kind of billed as a fantasy show.
Right. And
like,
it is a fantasy show.
It is a fantasy show. And they were like, oh, it's Lord of the Rings-ish and all this and that.
It's
and
not
it's like,
Lord of the Rings-ish, though.
First episode, White Walkers and all that. And then the rest of it, it's like, it's kind of like the old thing where it's like you want to make a movie that's about something, but it's not about it. So like you'll make a boxing movie that's not about boxing. It's about the characters and you'll never show the boxing. And it's like this. This is a fantasy show, but it's all about the politics. It's all about the character building. And
it's more subversion like we talked about last week. Where
yeah.
It's the fantasy epic, but a different angle on it. Different subversion to
it. And I dig that. I like that.
Yeah.
So.
All right, moving on. Let's go to Arya 3, the third Arya chapter ever. What happens in this one, Josh?
Well, Arya goes off and does her Arya thing. She sneaks around and, she's chasing cats.
Chasing a cat.
For Syrio. And, and then she hears a couple of guys talking who, I guess, is Varys and I don't know who the other guy is.
Yeah, okay. So she chases a cat, she gets lost, and she ends up in, you know, a dark, someplace under the Red Keep.
Yeah.
She sees the dragon skulls, which happens in the book. And I was curious to get your take on this. So this does happen in the show. She chases a cat.
Mm-hmm.
They skip over that whole Tommen and Marcella part.
Yeah.
They don't include that. But and then she overhears two guys talking about, well, what do they talk about?
It's like the dragon and the lion or something like that. And they mention Drogo and kind of Meereen and all the stuff that's happening over there. And the war is not going to start until...
The hand. They're talking about, like, well, could you kill this hand too?
Yeah, and there's more players entering the game and this and that. And so it was very much like setting... It was like another world-building thing where it's like we're getting this information about... Because we understand... We've kind of seen everybody in their own element. We've seen King's Landing and over in... Are they in Meereen? Is that where they are? Not yet.
Not even close.
Drogo.
No,
okay.
No, they're just wandering
over
around.
In whatever it is. Over
Essos.
There. Essos.
The other comment. They're just kind of wandering around the great Dothraki Sea.
But we've had them there and we've got up north. And so this is kind of, to me, it was threading it all together.
Yeah.
Like, we know about them. So it's like, it's not some like foreign place to them. It's like,
yeah,
we know that
saying.
It's Drogo and everybody like that. There's going to be a war. We know they want to come to King's Landing. So it kind of advanced the plot in that way to me. And it was in a cool way where we got more of Arya's character in that she's this, you know, we already got this. She's kind of the rebel without a cause and she's like sneaking
very
around.
Independent.
And that actually advanced the plot where she's not just sneaking around for sneaking around. She's sneaking
she
around.
Overhears
and,
some
by the way, she stumbles upon this. Yeah, so, which ends up being Varys. And
it's Varys is one of the guys she overhears, and it's Illyrio Mopatis, which is a minor character from the show. He's bigger in the book, but he was the guy that Dany and Viserys were staying with in somebody's mansion at the beginning of the book.
Oh, okay.
And he's the one who kind of officiated the marriage to Drogo.
Mm.
And so he's in King's Landing.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say it's world building. It's more like world connecting, like you said.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. Yeah.
That
Threading
we're actually, we're like, we're, yo, like, Daenerys' thing is happening over in another part of the world, another part of the book, and we're actually bringing, we're kind of connecting it, which is kind of exciting.
Because
you have to wonder if you're reading this, like, why are we reading about this weird dragon or this weird silver-haired lady?
Yeah.
But it links up, it connects, which is cool. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're good. I think we went out there for a sec, but we are back. Sorry if we lost anybody there. Okay, my question for you is, if you hadn't seen the show, or even if you did, would you have realized who these people were? Do you know that Varys was involved in this scene?
I kind of had an idea about it. I wasn't 100% sure. I was trying to figure out who they were, because I figured, because this has kind of happened before, it happened in the Sansa chapter, where she saw somebody that she didn't know, but it ended up being somebody that was pretty important. So I kind of figured that they were going to be characters we had already met, just Arya didn't know who they were. I didn't know who the other guy was. I kind of figured Varys was one of them. I thought maybe Littlefinger would have been another one. I don't know. It's just the way that they were talking about.
Sneaking around and just being generally sneaky?
The sneaking around and kind of the talking about Daenerys and all that, I figured it might be somebody who was something to do with that. So,
fair enough.
That was kind of a tip to me.
I mean, it also tells us that Varys, again, isn't being honest with Ned. He didn't tell him any of this stuff. He's talking about this in a weird, shadowy area with some weird dude. So he's obviously got something underhanded planned.
I did appreciate, like, the code that they're talking into, like the lion and the dragon are going head-to-head or something.
Yeah, that's always
like
good,
some secret society. Like, yeah, that was kind of fun. I liked that.
And also, I mean, it's the kind of code talk that Arya, you know, wouldn't really get. Or, again, it's like Sansa, where she doesn't get all of it.
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty clearly in reference to Ned, but when she actually tells Ned about it, he's like, they're just actors.
Yeah.
Should he have taken her more seriously?
I think he should have. And I think this goes back to what we had in the last Ned chapter, which is he's just so dug into his own thing that the blinders are up. And he's like, I know what I'm doing. I'm in complete control of this. And it's like, you have no control over the situation whatsoever.
That's a good point. Yeah,
and it almost makes it more tragic, because not only is somebody from the outside kind of trying to pull him off and be like, look, reconsider the situation, it's his daughter who's doing it. It's not some like random character who's like, I think you might be wrong. It's his daughter literally pleading to him, like, you need to listen to me. And he's like, no, you don't know what you're talking about. And that's a tragedy to me. That makes it tougher to swallow.
That's one more warning sign that's just not getting through Ned Stark's, like a lot of others.
It almost made me just kind of like write Ned off a little bit. I'm like, look, this can't be helped. Like, there, you've had so many red flags raised here. There's just no helping this. Like, I know it's going to happen, obviously.
I know. We could be biased because we know what's coming. But yeah,
maybe that's my defense mechanism. I'm psychologically just being like, nope, I'm preparing myself. So
one thing I wanted to quickly point out is just to keep with our little movie genre metaphor. If the Ned Stark chapters are like a noir murder mystery, then this one was kind of like a Nancy Drew mystery, where the little girl is like stumbling into a dark corridor and overhearing people talk about interesting plots and then trying to like be plucky and solve it herself.
Oh, man. You have to have somebody like draw up this artwork. Like, I'm just like picturing Arya like sneaking around, like, you know, book cover and everything like that. And you can
find it.
And then you can find it on the Winter is Coming Facebook page.
I can see it. So. It's like she's like in the corner and like there's some taller guy down with like a coat on talking skeevily in the night.
I like that. The Nancy Drew chapters and the noir chapters.
And finally, talking about George R. Martin's language, I want to point out really quickly, this is a phrase he uses a bunch, so I figured we'd just note it. When Arya overhears Varys and Illyrio Mohatos talking, Illyrio talks in the liquid accents of the free cities.
Yeah.
When you read that, what does that mean to you?
I interpreted that as like the Blade Runner language that James Almos speaks in Blade Runner. It's like a mixture of like, it's like, I forget what it exactly is, but I think they wrote it like as a mixture of like Mandarin and there was a bunch of different like Asian languages like meshed into one Blade Runner language, because that was like the thing, is like it's all this meshing of thing. And I kind of got that from this, where I felt it was like a meshing of the different languages from all around. King's Landing is like the Coruscant in Star Wars, where it's like this meeting of every kind of culture. So like the language is kind of mixed together a little bit. So that's how I interpret. I could be completely wrong.
No, that's cool. I would never have gone there. I just thought it was like a writerly way to describe a foreign accent without really describing it at all.
Oh.
Because he'll come back to that. Like, whenever someone's from Essos, they have a liquid accent. And I'm like, what the hell does that sound like? It doesn't really mean anything. Liquid. But apparently
I figured fluid language. I felt like he was going in and out, weaving in and out of different kind of dialects.
I like it. Yeah. Ooh, okay. Any other thoughts on either of these chapters, Josh?
No, I enjoyed them. So.
Cool. But next week we can hit the next two, which I think is Ned and Catelyn. Quick Ned one and then longer Catelyn one.
Okay.
And Julie asked, Dan, will you please have David Harris on as a guest one day?
Yeah.
David Harris, Razor. He hosts the Take the Black House Razor podcast, which is going to be a new episode is up right now on the Winter's Coming website. He is remote, but we can get him in here someday. Absolutely.
Already replacing me.
Wait, no, replace me with Razor. He would do his own segment called Razor Yells About Stuff.
I don't say hi all these times, and now I'm getting pushed out. If only I had known.
You have to respond to the viewers. They shape you as you shape them.
It's true. This is true.
We have a relationship.
It's the fluid.
Anyway, this is a lot of fun, guys. We'll be back next Wednesday at 4 p.m. Central. We're going to give away those great fun.com things, talk about more Game of Thrones, talk about Fire News, and go through more Game of Thrones chapters with Josh Hill and us Hungerman and Josh. So until next time, have a great night.